If you found this podcast, chances are you're a high achiever and you're successful. But now you're stuck and stressed, and you realize that everything you've created hasn't given you the fulfillment and the joy you thought it would. This is where we discuss the keys of high performance mindset and stepping into the next best version of yourself. Welcome to the Positive Persistence Podcast.
I'm your host, Ian Bowen, and today I am joined by Dr. Eric Recker. Eric, welcome to the show.
Ian, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. Eric, you are a certified success coach, entrepreneur, recovering triathlete, a dentist, a dad, a best-selling author, a speaker. You host corporate events. How do you make the time to make all of that happen? And I know that before we started recording, you said, like, right now you are really, like, up against the parameters or the walls of your time and kind of burning the candle at both ends a little bit. But how do you get all of that done? How do you make the time to do all that stuff?
Yeah, well, exactly like you said, Ian, sometimes I go through seasons where I'm not doing it quite so well. And I found in this latest season that I've said a whole lot of yeses, and I haven't said a lot of strategic no's. So the crazy thing is, when we say yes to something, we're saying no to something else. And the first thing that seems to go when we say a no is our family. Those safe things that we know, well, they'll still be there if we kind of push that to the side. So, you know how this is, Ian, when you're growing a business, and that's what I'm doing, I'm in a growth phase with my speaking and coaching. It's hard to say no. Mm-hmm. And so I find the time to make it happen. But we have finite hours in the day. So it extends outside of normal hours. I see patients on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays. And my other content, coaching, speaking, all of that is in theory boundaried to Thursday and Friday. But ideas don't always come during those times, and availability doesn't always come during those times. So it goes off into Saturday and Sunday sometimes. So I'm kind of in that season right now. But when I am focused on my systems, and when I am focused on keeping things within those boundaries, I can be pretty effective at managing my time well.
Yeah. And when we talk about time, and you use the phrase, you know, I find the time, I find that phrase is a little misleading, you know, because we don't really find the time. I always like to joke, like, if you are trying to find the time, you're going to keep looking for it. You have to make the time, right? And that's the simple truth of it. Like, if you don't make the time, you're not going to find it.
Yeah, you're exactly right. So what happens with our time is the things that are most important rise to the top. They just do. And then the other things, we either procrastinate and put them off, or we've put them off for so long, they eventually just fall off the list. I'm sure I'm not the only one who's ever had those kind of things, but you know, this thing's been on the list for a while, keeps getting pushed down. Yeah, that's not a priority anymore. We'll just kind of shove that off to the side. So really what time management is it's just taking those things that are most important and fitting those into our calendars. And I don't know about you, but I even have to find myself lately not fitting in, but scheduling time with my wife, scheduling time with my kids, scheduling those times of things. Because if it doesn't happen, based on Parkinson's law, a task is going to expand to the amount of time you give it. So if I have a to-do list and I give myself 4 hours to do that to-do list, it's going to take 4 hours. If I give myself 3 hours to do that to-do list, guess what? I'm probably going to do it in 3 hours. So a lot of the wisdom is knowing how to block our time, how to bank our time that way.
Yeah, blocking time is huge. And I have found that I have given that a go in the past, and I didn't make it stick, but I've kind of re-upped that effort here in the last quarter of the year. And it's really helping me, especially now with all the things that are going on, to get things done. You know, you allot a certain amount of time, like you said, to a task, and that helps me focus on on that task for that time. And I know that that's all the time that I have to do it. And so got to get down to business. So, you know, and that's a lot about what you talk about in terms of energy balance. And I want to get into that conversation. And I want to talk about, you know, the books that you've written, especially I want to start off with talking about the Win the Now book. And I was hoping that you could describe to our listeners and to our viewers, like, what is that phrase about? What is Win the Now about?
Yeah, so Win the Now was born from the fact that a lot of times I would come home at the end of the day and my wife would ask me, how was your day? And I would say, well, this happened. And it was usually not a good thing that happened. So I would reduce a whole day to one thing that happened. And especially in my dental practice, I maybe have 40 conversations a day between talking to my team, talking to patients, all of that. I can have a lot of conversations. And there's really a lot of good things that happened in almost every one of the days. But I was so quick to reduce it to the worst thing that happened.
Yeah.
So I knew I needed a mindset shift. Instead of favoring those losses as far as my conversation goes, I thought, what if I started to look for wins during the day instead of magnifying these losses? Mm-hmm. Because I have so many opportunities for wins throughout the day. When you have that many one-on-one conversations, I remember my pastor told me one time when I was kind of struggling with purpose, he said, man, I'd give anything to have as many conversations as you do in a day. He said, that's your church. Go be their leader. Okay. So that was hugely impactful. So I start looking for wins throughout the day. Well, what does that even look like? So a lot of us live our lives based on a schedule. And for me, my schedule is based in 15-minute increments. So when I see a patient, it's how many 15-minute increments do I need to complete the procedure on that patient? And then I also have to get up and have phone calls with my dental lab. I have conversations with my team, all of those kind of things. Check my hygienist patients. So I ask myself, what do wins look like in that 15-minute time frame? So if I have a patient in the chair, what does a win look like? Well, hopefully we have a good conversation. Hopefully if there's any anxieties or fears, which sometimes happens when people go to the dentist, I try to help work through that with them.
Yeah.
You know, help make it easier for them. Sometimes a big win is at the end of the appointment, the patient says, well, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Right.
You know, that's the bar we set. So
sure.
I'm always looking for those kind of wins. And also knowing that my time frame, my now, is going to be constantly resetting throughout the day. So there are going to be times when we're going to take losses. I may have a patient who's frustrated with me, or frustrated with my front desk. Maybe anesthetic didn't work as well as we had hoped it would in a certain procedure. And those things can feel like a loss. Mm-hmm. What I do with those is I always have a piece of paper in my pocket that I write notes on throughout the day so I don't forget things that I need to do. I'll write down those losses. And then I'll come back later and I will ask those losses one simple question. What can I learn from it? And when I do that, then those losses turn into wins. So my mindset is shifted. Through neuroplasticity, I'm looking for wins instead of losses. And now I'm much more likely to come home and talk about the favorable parts of my day.
Yeah.
And so this translates to any what anybody does. A lot of people will have meetings all day. Okay, what does a win look like in the meeting? Maybe it looks like you don't pick your phone up during that meeting. Maybe it looks like you contribute to the meeting, or you get value and action steps from that meeting. Or if you're leading the meeting, it looks like you were prepared well. You delivered your content well. There was good reciprocal back and forth. Mm-hmm. And then we can even take this home to our families. What do wins look like around the dinner table? What are the right questions that we can ask to learn about each other's wins and struggles, things like that?
Right.
And how can we be fully present in the moment so that we can grab those wins? So when we start changing our mindset to start looking for wins, we're much more likely to find them.
Absolutely. I want to go back to word that you use that some people may trip over, and that is neuroplasticity. Can you explain that for us?
Yeah, so one of the coolest things about our brains is that they don't have to stay the way that they are. It's really cool.
Right.
So if I practice win the now for one day and then leave it, I probably had a good day, right?
Yeah.
But if I try to work on the concepts of win the now every day for 30 days, for 60 days, for 90 days, my brain is retrained to start looking for wins. My brain is retrained to start looking for lessons from losses. Mm-hmm. And I'm less defeated. I'm more positive. I'm more in the moment. All of these things are happening because I decided to look for wins. And because my brain is forming new synapses, forming new cells that are helping this all be possible.
All right. Laying down new neural pathways, right?
Yep.
And I love that. Yep. And I like to kind of describe that as well. For us anyway, in the Midwest, we'll understand this this correlation with like cross-country skiing, right? And you're out on the trail and you hope that there have been a couple people ahead of you that have actually laid down that track. And then because the more people that have been on it before you, the deeper the track is and the easier it is for you to glide along that track. Kind of the same thing with neuroplasticity and laying down those neural pathways. The more that you do those same habits, those same thoughts, those same actions, that kind of deepens that track and you're able to glide upon a little bit smoother. You know, so I love that. And thank you for bringing that up. And you also brought up something that is really important in terms of being present, you know, and I feel that for a lot of us, that is a really difficult thing to do because we're always distracted. We're always distracted by our phones, or we might be having a conversation with somebody who is distracted by their phone, you know, and at the dinner table with the kids, you know, it's really difficult to be present. So what do you think are some of the best ways for you to kind of slow things down, as it were, so you can be present and really pay attention to what's happening around you?
Yeah, so I think it all starts with self-awareness. We really have to be aware of what are the things that pull us out of the present moment. And we have to understand what the magic of the present moment is, because this moment is really where the magic is happening. And anything else takes us away from the moment, takes us away from the people around us, shows us that the people around us are not as important as we say they are. You know, if I'm having a conversation with you trying to do this podcast here, and I pick my phone up and I'm checking about a bunch of notifications, I'm going,
yeah.
That shows you very intentionally from me that this is not my most important thing right now.
Right.
And so the thing that's really tough is that I think that phones are the biggest stealers of presence that we've ever had. But the other good thing and the opportunity in that is the only reason that they're stealers of presence is because we've allowed it.
Yes, I love that. Right.
Yep. So we don't have to be captives to our phones. Mm-hmm. So one of the questions I have started asking over the last couple of years is very simple with my phone. Why am I picking this up? And it also goes back to that saying yes to one thing is saying no to another thing. Saying yes to my phone is saying no to having a conversation with you. Saying right. yes to my phone while my wife and I are watching a movie or having dinner is saying no to her.
Yeah.
It really is. And my wife actually has gotten to the point where if I'm not in the moment, she just stops talking. She just, I'll wait.
Right.
Are you done? Yeah. And that really hurts because I realized that. But Asking that question, why am I picking this up? So what's the purpose? Did you get a notification that you really need to address? If you do, address it, put the phone back down, move on. But if you're picking your phone up just to do your phone routine, right? And we all have one, right? Check Instagram, we check Facebook, we check LinkedIn, we maybe check the weather, check the news, check the sports, check all this stuff. And if it took us too long to go around the horn, dang, we probably missed something. So we better do it again. And then, oh, by the way, we got into a video rabbit hole on Instagram and it's 45 minutes later.
Yeah.
Nothing's gotten done and we have nothing to show for it. Right. So sometimes we can short circuit that repetitive pattern that really doesn't do anything for us by asking, why am I picking this up?
Mm-hmm. And that is one of the ways that I imagine that we win the now. And I know that you have some other principles that go along with that ideology. Could you share that with us?
Yeah, one of the things that really steals us from the present moment is something I call the false sense of urgency. So there's good urgency and there's bad urgency. If you slice your arm and you need stitches, there is a good urgency for you to get to the ER and get those stitches put in, right? Because there's consequences if you don't do that. Mm-hmm. There's also what I call the false sense of urgency, which is the voice of should. And really, the false sense of urgency is like this background app that runs right back here, right at the base of our brain. And you know, we have background apps that are running on our phone, right? All this stuff that's going, sucking energy, doing all of this different stuff. Part of the reason we need to plug our phones in. The false sense of urgency sits at the base of our brain. And it tells us, Ian, you can't sit still. You can't take a break. You should be creating this content. You should be doing this. You should be looking at your social media. You should be doing this. You should be doing this. You can't sit down. You can't rest. You can't take a nap. You can't do any of those things because there's a million things to do. And how do you know if it's the false sense of urgency is you sit down and you actually make a list of the things that need to be done. Mm-hmm. And it's not that many things.
Right.
But that voice constantly goes. And one of the ways to really shut that down is to be in the present moment and asking yourself, what do I really need in this present moment? That false sense of urgency used to sabotage me and hijack my Sunday afternoons all the time because there was a project that could be done around the house. Didn't need to be done right away.
Right.
But I would go all in on that. I'd get to the end of Sunday, realize that Monday was right around the corner. I hadn't done anything to take care of myself over the weekend. And here we are. I obeyed the voice of should again. So I think when we notice that false sense of urgency and realize what it's trying to do to us and realizing how it's pulling us out of the moment, then we can be more likely to say no to it.
That's awesome. Yeah, the should, that's... When we should on ourselves, it gets really messy sometimes.
Right? That's exactly what my dad said. He always told me that. He goes, Eric, don't should on yourself. You're going to be stepping around in a whole pile of mess.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. It's time to ask yourself, when was the last time you prioritized you? Did you know that research shows that nearly 85% of high performers struggle to maintain a performance mindset while juggling the demands of work and personal life? Those who actively prioritize their performance mindset and personal growth are 30% more likely to achieve their goals in business and life. If you're feeling crippling stress and anxiety, or if you're feeling guilty when you take a moment for yourself, or if you're stuck in the grind and feeling burnt out, you're not alone. Many of us yearn for more, but struggle with the fear of being judged or feeling selfish. And you want to step into the next best version of yourself. That's why I created the Rinse Method, which got me from paraplegic to marathon runner, backed by science-based proven strategies and now customized for high performers like you. If you're stuck and stressed and want clear steps that you can implement today to move forward, make sure you visit thepositivepersistence.com to download our free Rinse PDF. Eric, I want to transition and talk about your latest book, That Damn Analogy, which I've had the pleasure of reading. And I love how this is like it's a book and a workbook, like all in one. And you guys need to go out and you need to get this book. It is chock full of strategies and tips and tricks. And if you grew up in the 80s, you will really appreciate the references in this book. There, yeah, I love those. So in talking about this book, and really, I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's really about energy balance, that what you're covering in the book. And in the book, you mentioned that when we find a proper balance between filling up and pouring out, that is sustainable, we've achieved a sweet spot. And when we talk about filling up and pouring out, we hear this phrase, you know, getting poured into a lot. What does it mean to find balance between filling up and pouring out?
Yeah, so if we go back to the concept a little bit of how really what the book is about is we're like a dam. And so what a dam does is it controls the flow of water. A lot of dams are built for flood control. So there's a lake on one side and there's a river on the other side. The river is our output. It's all the things that we do in the world. And really, as us like a dam, all we're doing is controlling the flow of energy that goes through us. And some people have said to me, that's all new age woo-woo BS. And I said, well, try it out for a little while. See if it works. And if it is, great. But it has changed my life because we have an outflow of energy, an outflow of like the dam with water. And that's all the things we do to impact the world. So it's our, and I really, in my workshops, we really break it down into what are all the things that cause us to use energy. It's our jobs for sure. It's maintaining relationships. It is the volunteering things that we do. It's the extra things that we do for our friends and family. It's everything that we do into the world that takes energy. Our inflow is the part that we're not so good at. We get the outflow stuff done. We find a way to get it done. We bend time. We find time. We make time. Make we prioritize time. The things that we have to do.
Yeah.
But we're not so good at the inflow part. We don't take very good care of ourselves. And we're dishonest with ourselves about how much we have in reserve. It's one of the biggest problems that I find is that we lie to ourselves. So on a 1 to 10 scale, if 10 is I'm having the best day I've ever had in my life, and 1 is I'm barely alive, I have nothing left. We lie to ourselves. We tell ourselves that we're in that 6, 7, 8 range that feels, you know, somewhat sustainable. The reality is that we're a 2, 3, or a 4. And if we keep outflowing the same when we're a 2, 3, or a 4, there's going to be a problem. The problem is going to show up in either a sickness. We're going to make a really bad decision. Mm-hmm. We're going to be short and chippy with one of our family members,
yeah,
or a coworker. We're going to say something we regret, all of those kind of things. And when we're empty, we hit snags on the bottom of the lake. So if you go out and you boat and you do things like that, enjoy the recreation on a lake. If that lake is too low, you got to be careful where you go because you might hit a snag. And when we're too empty, we're not going to see them, but we're going to hit snags. And so we really have to be careful. You know, the outflow side, I don't find too many people who are short on the outflow side. But it is easy to spot them because they're all about, look at me, 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 me. It's all about me. I don't really help other people with stuff. I'm just enlarging my kingdom. And they're not very fun people to be around. But the majority of us, I'm guessing the majority of high achievers who are listening to this podcast are people who do a lot of things with their time. So my question is always for people, what are you doing to take care of yourself? Well, how about the outputs? Well, let's get to, we certainly have to look at that. And there might be some things we have to take away, some things we need to subtract, but what are you doing on a daily basis to take care of yourself? That's the big question.
Right. And what are some of the things that people can do, or you would categorize as inflow?
Yeah, so inflow is anything we do that feels like it brings our energy level back up. naps are one thing. So, Ian, I don't know if you wear a smartwatch or not. I wear one from time to time. Sometimes I'm on a break with it because I pay a little too much attention to the metrics on it.
Yeah.
But my watch has a feature called a body battery on it. Mm-hmm. It's a Garmin watch, it has a body battery. I really like that feature. Sometimes I hate it because it shows I'm not taking care of myself, but it takes into account how much we've slept, takes into account how much we spent energy the day before. It takes into account, you know, what our resting heart rate is, what our stress level is, you know, all of those types of things. Mm-hmm. And so I'm constantly a student of what are the things that cause that to drain slower. And are there any things during the day that can help tick it back up a little bit? And I have found really only a couple of things that really tick it back up. One is a nap, which I'm not very good at, and I'm trying to get better at.
Yeah.
So naps, a nap is one thing. Yeah.
That's great.
I don't know about you.
The opportunity to take them very often, but there are times where my body says, whether you like it or not, you need to lay down.
Yeah.
Take a quick
nap. Sure. So naps. And another thing is just sitting in quiet and just deep breathing, slowing things down, settling into, you can call it mindfulness, you can call it meditation, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But just being quiet and being undistracted and letting the noise just settle down, because our brains need that. So those are a couple of the really big things, but there's a lot of really small things that we can do during the day. I like to call those micro resilience, things that can help get us a little bit farther to being filled up. So one of those is sitting at your desk and instead of picking up your phone, just taking a few really deep breaths. You know, Ian, we were at the same conference and Mitch Matthews talked about power poses.
Yeah.
So yep. Standing up, feet a little bit wider than shoulders, doing the Superman pose with your hands on your hips, mm-hmm. and just standing there for a couple minutes. It looks goofy, but it decreases cortisol, it settles your stress, and it helps increase some of the good hormones in our brain.
Yeah, it works.
So things like that, getting outside, getting the sun on your forehead for 5 minutes, going outside and moving for 10, 15, 20 minutes, taking a walk around the block, any of those kind of things, actually sitting down and reading a book. All of those things are small things that we can do that really make a big difference, because one huge problem I see is that we bank on the regenerative effect of a 1 week vacation. And what happens, I'm sure I'm not the only one who's ever had this scenario, but you show up for the vacation and you are exhausted. You've poured everything into getting ready for that vacation. You've worked really hard. You've tied up all the loose ends. You're all ready to go and it's going to be this amazing vacation. Well, guess what? It takes you about 4 or 5 days to get uncorked, right? You're still at that kind of elevated level and you can't really settle in and rest.
Yeah.
And then you got a day, maybe two, and then it's time to go back. And then, oh, by the way, you got to catch up on everything that was missed.
Yes.
And we don't get a lot of 1 week vacations. We get even fewer 2 week vacations. So I like to challenge people, what can you do on a Tuesday to fill yourself back up? Because we get a lot more Tuesdays than we get 1 week vacations.
I love that. And yeah, Eric, you are so right. Like, I will find myself on day three of a 5 day vacation, finally relaxing. Finally, the machine has turned off and I'm finally like, okay, this is what vacation is supposed to feel like. And then 2 days later, packing up to leave, and yep, you nailed it. Get home and now it's catch up time. And it's like, now the machine is in overdrive trying to catch up and, you know, put out all the fires that were happening while we're gone. So yeah, that is so powerful for you to be able to do the things that fill you up on a daily basis on a random Tuesday to help you kind of get your energy level back up. Now, what do you say to people who may take your advice and follow all the things that you just listed on how they can increase their inflow. And they say, well, that's all that stuff is about me. Like, I feel like selfish spending all that time on just me. What's the message to, or what's the answer to that?
Well, first thing I ask people is I say, all right, do you believe that you are made for impact? Do you believe that you are made to make a difference in the world? And most people are going to say, well, obviously, yes. And then the next thing I say to them is, okay, are you more likely to make an impact in the world if you're a 3 or if you're a 7? So my point in saying that is we have to be a little bit selfish so that we can be selfless. Mm. So one of the things that has changed my life, and I'm super fortunate, I live 2 miles away from my dental practice and I'm able to walk there. So I walk to work as many days as I can. I've walked in 40 below wind chill. There's no bad weather, just bad gear. So I have, but what that does is it gives me 30 minutes of movement in the fresh air in the morning. Time to get my mind right. I pray, I practice gratitude. I do a bunch of stuff like that. On the walk home, I have 30 minutes to decompress as I'm walking home. Mm-hmm. Practice some more gratitude, let my mind just wander. Sometimes I'll listen to some music. Sometimes I'll catch up on a phone call with a friend while I'm walking home. But on the way in, it's usually quiet. And so I get about an hour of movement outside every day because of that. And some people are going to say, well, that's selfish. You took an hour of time just for yourself. Well, it takes me about, by the time I get in the car, drive there, park, walk in, all that kind of stuff, we're looking at about 10 minutes anyway. So really, it's only about 40 minutes. And would my wife and my family rather have me home after I decompressed like that? Or would they rather have me when my head is still spinning? So to me, that is the best example that I know of being selfish so that you can be selfless.
Yeah, I love that. And that really speaks to, you know, doing the things that you need to do so you can actually present yourself as the best version of yourself to the day and to whoever you're going to be talking to, in your case, your patients or your team, or for everybody's case, for their family. And so I love that that is that message, that is okay. And actually, I guess, really kind of reinventing just shining a different light on the definition of selfish, and that it's not a bad thing. Like, it's okay to be selfish when you're actually doing the things that are going to fill you up so you can be that much better for yourself and for everybody else. I love that. And I want to talk about... go ahead.
One more thing real quick. I like to ask people, so whatever your job is, so let's take you for example, Ian. Are you a better gym owner if you're taking care of yourself?
Absolutely. That's
are you a better podcaster if you're taking care of yourself?
For sure. 100%.
Are you a better husband if you're taking care of yourself?
Yes. Yes. And I have those, I have a practice I put in place that I make time for every morning. And that is meditation. I get my workout in. I get some snuggle time in with my wife as we have a cup of coffee every morning together, you know, and that sets me up for the rest of the day. And then I'm full, like I am ready to rock and roll. And if I don't do that, then I find myself off. I find myself edgy. I find myself short with people. I find myself kind of discombobulated. Absolutely. When I am able to pour into myself and do those things that are, you know, increasing my inflow, that definitely affects what my outflow is going to be for the rest of the day. And my energy is up. And there is something that you talk about in your book. And I love this quote. You say that you can only loan out your energy for so long before the bill comes due. Right. And that speaks to not pouring back into yourself and not refilling yourself and only, you know, having your outflow and giving and doing, but not spending the time to recharge, right?
Yeah. You can take a break or one will be taken for you. Your body is only going to let you pour out so long before you have to take care of yourself. And it can be subtle, you know, that thing for me. So in my dental practice, I got crazy burned out. It was myself. I was managing 18 people and I was a solo owner, and I got really close to selling my dental practice and walking away because I was so burned out. Mm-hmm. I was overcommitted, way too much on my plate, and I was not taking care of myself. So those are the two things that we really have to address, is how many things are we trying to do and how are we taking care of ourselves? Yeah. And the way that the bill came due for me was chest pain, tension headaches, heart palpitations, and panic attacks. And I don't know if you've had a panic attack or not, but for those who have had one, you don't really want to have one again. And it's not, they don't happen only because you're not taking care of yourself, but it does play into it. And so I had to step back and I had to create a new self-care routine. I had to create a self-care routine because my body, I'm not totally sure I'd be alive today, Ian, if I hadn't started to pay attention to some of those symptoms that kept mounting and kept showing up.
Yeah.
Because we have to take care of ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, our health is paramount. And, you know, just from my own experience, taking it for granted is not the thing that you want to do, because once it is compromised, you have to work like hell to get it back. And you wish that you got it back yesterday, but it's an uphill battle sometimes to put that work in to get it back. So you really do need to protect it as much as possible. And let's talk.
And then be grateful for it.
Yeah. Yes. 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 Absolutely. I mean, there are so many things that when I was struggling through my health issues that I took for granted, that I never thought about ever. And nobody really would. But once they're stripped and they're taken away, and once you do get them back, it opens up a whole new perspective on life. And yes, you have to be grateful for the abilities that you have currently. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about burnout, because that's something you brought up and that's something that you talk about in the book. And I think that's something that a lot of us feel, especially I'll just talk about for myself, who's in, you know, the sandwich generation, the sandwich situation where, you know, I have an aging mom who has some health issues. We're raising five boys. You know, we're running a business. We're starting another one. And it is like we're on tilt all the time. So, and I feel a lot of us, you know, are thinking about, you know, I've got to go to work. I got to pay the bills. I got to take care of my kids. I got to get to the practices. I got to do this. My to-do list is longer than long. And we get that feeling of, there isn't enough hours in the day, right? I'm sure we've all heard or used that phrase before. How do we start to, I guess, pare things down or back things off so we can give ourselves some room to breathe so we don't feel burnt out?
Yeah. So one of the things I always like to bring up when we talk about this is I think people are starting to get, if they're not there, burned out on the term burnout. You know, it's kind of a buzzword. It's kind of all over the place. So I like to have people think of burnout as a continuum or a spectrum. Mm-hmm. Okay. So burnout is really bad. And some people say, well, I'm not burned out. Okay. Well, are you overwhelmed? Are you fatigued? Maybe you could use the word torched, stretched. You know, we have all these other terms. So it's, you may not be in full-fledged burnout, but I bet you can identify with at least one of those other terms. Right. And so I think one of the first things that we can really do is we can raise our hand and admit that we're in a season of struggling. And for some people, there's some pride and all that, and it's really tough to do that. But raising your hand might even be getting out a piece of paper and writing, I am feeling burned out, or I am feeling overwhelmed. Sometimes it's as simple as you're overwhelmed, but you don't really know why you're overwhelmed. So on that same piece of paper under there, do a brain dump. Write down every single thing that's in your mind. Give yourself 10 minutes. Write down every single thing that's in your mind. And then circle the three most important things, and then go to work on those. So sometimes we really are burned out and we have way too much going on. But sometimes when we step back and look at how we use our time, we're not burned out. We're just using our time poorly. Right. Most people say, I'm so busy. You know, that's the tagline right now. I'm so busy. You know, oh, it's busy. We got this and we get this and we get this and we get this and we get this. Oh, I don't have any time to take care of myself. I don't have this. I don't have that. I don't have that. And my first question, if I'm coaching somebody, I say, can I see your screen time for the last 3 weeks?
Right.
Oh, well, no, I don't spend that much time on my phone. Doesn't take much to get 2 or 3 hours on the screen time. And I'm not, you know, Ian, I talk badly about phones a lot of the time. Phones can be great. We can really use them for a lot of good things. But they are stealers of presence if we allow them, and they contribute to how burnt out and anxious we are. There's science behind it. There's proof. So I tell people one of the first things is admit it. Raise your hand. If you have a friend you can trust, get together with them and just say it out loud. There's power in raising your hand and admitting it. The next thing I tell people to do is actually look at your time. How are you spending it? Mm-hmm. Are all the things that you're doing getting your best yes? Or are there some things that you're just doing that either someone else could do, or maybe you don't need those things in this season of your life?
Right.
So I think if we would start there and we'd be really honest about those two steps, I think it's a big place to start. And then from there, a lot of times we need an ally. We need somebody who's going to walk along with us through this to help us set up a life that we don't need a vacation from. You know, we're always trying to escape. We're always trying to get away. Our phones offer that.
Right.
But what if we started working with a coach who could help us figure out, okay, what needs to stay in my life? What can go, and what are some systems and habits that I can put in place in my life that are going to make my life more sustainable?
I love the thought of basically building a life where you enjoy it so much that you don't need to take a vacation. That's awesome. That is it's an amazing premise, you know, and I think that, you're exactly right. You need somebody to help you do that. Whoever that ally is, that is something that is very difficult, if not impossible, to do on your own. So you need to have a coach or an accountability partner or somebody that can help you with that process.
Yes.
Love that. Eric, I want to give our listeners and our viewers the opportunity to dig into more of Dr. Eric Recker and all of his things in terms of your philosophies and your books. And where's the best place for our listeners and viewers to find you and more about the damn analogy, which I love that title.
Yeah. So home base for me is ericrecker.com. And I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram. So you can find me any of those places. I'm all about creating value. So my posts are going to be lessons that you can use. That's really important to me. I did create a 5-day knockback burnout challenge. If you feel like you're starting to face some burnout, even face some overwhelm, it's a good place to start. You can find that on my website as well. And I'm just launching some new coaching sessions, where if you really have one specific thing and you just want to see what coaching is like and you really want to get after it, we take 75 minutes and we just laser focus, attack that issue that you want to start dealing with. So, I am somebody who, and the books are available on Amazon, super easy to find. If you just, type in my name, you'll be able to find the books. So I'm a very relational person. I love to have conversations and see how I can help you on your journey. So I'd love to do that.
That is awesome. And it is so true about his Instagram. You guys, if you go and you check out his Instagram, his posts are always poised with content in terms of information and questions that you need to ask yourself. So there's always tips and tools you can walk away with from his posts. So I highly recommend you go check him out, especially on Instagram. A lot of value to be added there. Eric, thank you so much for your time today and giving us your tips and your insights on energy balance and, you know, how we can start to get away from that buzzword burnout and live a life where we feel like we don't need to take a vacation from. And I want to thank all of our listeners and our viewers for tuning into this episode. Remember to stay positive, stay persistent, and like we always say, mindset is everything. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for tuning in and being part of the Positive Persistence family. We're having a great time creating this content, and we truly hope it inspires you to embrace positivity and persistence in your own journey. If this podcast episode inspired you or entertained you, scroll down, hit those stars, and leave a comment or two. Your 5-star reviews and shares encourage us and help us grow the show. So until next time, stay positive, stay persistent, and remember, mindset is everything.